Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Streamtime Sports. I'm your host Nick Beecham and thrilled to be joined by my next guest who I've spoken to many times over the years and is a good friend of Sports Pros and indeed, in my view, one of the best minds in the US sports media space. So before I introduce my next guest, I want to give set a bit of a scene on his background because I think it will really lend itself today, particularly with your longer serving time at Fox Sports, which was, I think, something like 18 plus years at the company working on programming and strategy. All my research out the window within 30 seconds of the pod, but 23 years. Also, prior to that, was in the military. I have to ask you how you made that transition between military to Fox Sports. But before we do, I want to introduce Pat Crakes to the pod. It's not his first time being on here. He's been on with us before to help us look through and understand a little about the US sports media landscape. And for me, someone who sits in arm's length from it, it's getting even more crazier and complicated than it ever has. So Pat, great to have you back on the show. And tell us, how did you make the shift from being in the military to ending up at Fox Sports and leading on their programming and strategy?
Yeah, well, it's great to be back on the Porsche of sports media podcasts. So look, it was really actually very simple. I had one word, a college. I was an enlisted man in the Army. I left a sergeant, spent 3 years in the 82nd Airborne Division, and I went to college. And while I was in college, I didn't get my commission. But after I left college, I realized that was a stupid mistake. And I went to officer candidate school and got my commission in the infantry and then spent about another 6 years in the Army Reserves and the National Guard. So, but my transition was made easier by laying it down because it had been an intense nearly 4 years being in the unit like the 82nd Airborne Division in the mid 80s, and laid it down and went to college, joined a fraternity, right? You know, did the whole thing, met my wife, who was in a sorority, right? So that's the real thing I got out of college, and then I went to LA and got in the studio mailroom at Fox and went to officer candidate school as a reservist. And that's kind of how I started my media career. That's how it worked.
Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but if you haven't heard, next month we're heading to Manhattan for Sports Pro New York. On the 18th and 19th of March, you can hear from industry innovators such as Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark, Candle Media CEO and former top Disney executive Kevin Mayer, and LPGA Tour Commissioner Molly Marku Saman. Come to be inspired and learn how to successfully navigate the major opportunities in sports media. Book your place today at newyork.sportspro.com, and listeners to this podcast can get 20% off by using the code PODCAST in capital letters. That's PODCAST, PODCAST, at checkout. Terms and conditions apply, and this offer is not applicable to pre-existing purchases. There you go. Well, look, Pat, I was keen to get you on the pod soon anyway, just because it's been the US sports media landscape we spend a lot of time talking about, but it seems it's gotten really, really complex with what's happening at the local level, the in-market versus out-of-market with RSNs, et cetera, which I would love to talk more about if we get some time. But we get this this new announcement, which we really want to spend a good chunk of time talking about, which is the joint venture between ESPN and Disney, Warner Brothers Discovery and TNT Sports, and of course, Fox, your previous employers. Now, I'm going to try and set the scene there for those that may have heard the news. For me, you know, there's a lot of questions I have around how significant this announcement is or isn't and what can we take from it. But just to set the scene on some of the specifics that we do know so far, firstly, it's a joint venture between the three, so equal split of ownership of the organization. That adds up to, I think I read something like 56% of all major league sports rights. I'm guessing out of market there would be what they're talking about in that measure. Interestingly, you know, these businesses all have very different business models in their approach, particularly if you contrast an ESPN to a Fox. It's completely different. It's been well documented about how Fox has avoided going OTT for so long. You know, clearly all parties, because they have a different breadth and depth in what they do in the sports space, bring something different to the table, with ESPN bringing a huge amount of premium live sports to the table. Fox also bringing a good chunk. TNT perhaps bringing a little bit less to the table. And also ESPN's bringing not only, and 14 linear channels in total will be available on this platform, with ESPN Plus also being included in that. So clearly what's going to end up is, whilst it might be an even share, it's unlikely they're going to get equal returns from this, given the amount each party's putting into this. So look, that's a bit of a scene set here. For me, it's a significant announcement because of the fact that you've got people that have been historically fighting with each other, bidding against each other in huge rights battles for some time, competing against each other for the customer, are now coming together in this new initiative. The question is, how significant is this really? Which I'm going to get, Pat, your take on in a second. But one thing to add in all of this is, actually, let's jump straight into what you think, Pat, because I've got a couple other points around ESPN and so forth, which I think will play a role. But just look, when you heard the announcement, I'm not sure if you have your ears to the ground as well as anyone in the industry, but did you hear or think something like this was coming? We're seeing a lot of JVs. It seems like JVs and joint ventures are the new hot word in the industry lately. But did you see this deal coming at this sort of scale?
Yeah, I think if you go back, Nick, and you look at that article I wrote for you guys 3 years ago, I mean, this has been the obvious route for a long time. You ask the question, like, how important is this? It's important because it's an official recognition that segmented streaming can't really operate from an economically profitable perspective at scale, right? So that's the problem that the RSN DTC products have, right? So, you know, when you talk about all the different things that the companies and their content brings, you know, that's what bundling does for you, right? It's like bundling takes a bunch of things that are different, puts them together and offers them to the consumer at one price, right? And the consumer's not going to use everything. I hear people criticize bundles, or at least channel bundles. They don't criticize the McDonald's value meal bundle like that, or flow from Progressive's bundling, but they do with channels for some reason. And because the concepts are the same, you know, bundling is like a universal concept. Okay. I mean, there's actually a Disney streaming bundle. It just doesn't have enough stuff in it to really justify any pricing power or scale. So you don't use all the stuff in it, but you find what you want. And then because people typically live in families, you know, or live in groups, there's something for everyone, right? I mean, regional sports networks exist because of bundling. I've called them hothouse flowers of the pay TV bundle. But so is Lifetime. Now, Lifetime's less expensive because the audience that watches RSNs is the hardest audience to reach in all media.
So there's a bunch of things I want to dig into a little bit further. I mean, just for recency bias, the NBA, that's been the one that everyone's been following and waiting for. And until this point, everyone's been, well, this is going to be the last huge increase probably for the foreseeable future off the back of the NFL's huge numbers last cycle. Do you think this new relationship has enough connectivity and bundling together to put downward pressure on live sports media rights values moving forward? Or is it depends on who you think this is going to serve, right? And whether it is going to have immediate impact on, you know, the cable bundle or not, or whether it's just going to serve a different type of fan that may not have been subscribing to cable, but this is a lower price point that gives them what they want in live sports. But do you think this will put down pressure, firstly, on media rights investment into live sports because of the fact there'll be slightly less competition than for some of the biggest investors historically in that space? There is still plenty of competition in the market, but we've seen Amazon very prudent. CBS and Paramount are not exactly in the healthiest position to start throwing the kitchen sink at more rights potentially. NBC, you and Peacock are, who knows, sometimes they like to make a big bet and sometimes they've been a little bit more careful. So yeah, what's your take and view on all of that sort of competitive mix, I suppose?
So in answer to your question, I think we've already seen a beginning of the disruption of kind of media rights and aggregate. The system itself is beginning to adjust them, right? What I think we've seen is that for some properties or some parts of some properties, we've already seen a need to reach outside the established system to either gain distribution and certainly to gain the economics that these properties or leagues thought that they deserved. The best example is Thursday Night Football not being able to be monetized properly inside the ecosystem, what I call the established ecosystem. So it moves to a new partner on Amazon, which is great. The NFL doubles their money, but the ratings do go down, right? And even this year with the big jump, they're still down like 25% from Fox. So it's more complicated, and you pay the price on the viewing side, right? Now, the median age went up, but that's because the median age went down, but that's because there's less viewers. If they were doing the same viewers as Fox, the median age would be the same. Most people don't understand the media math on that, right? It's a PR thing, but I don't blame them for it. Or MLS, right, which could not get the economics it wanted from its current partners, ESPN and Fox. So it pivoted to another new platform, but one that's not, you know, lightly watched. Apple TV accounts for less than 1 minute of all video consumed across all platforms. But they got the economics. They had to give up all their rights, including their global rights. So they get their money. They're on with a super high quality partner. They're trying to blaze the future. But you know, there's, it's more complicated, right? So we've seen some of that. Or the ultimate complication. The need to aggregate content and make it more value means the Pac-12 goes away because they mismanaged their rights situation. I think those are already examples of the media rights marketplace being disrupted, right? It used to be you just did a deal, you got a check, came in every quarter, 6% higher every year, and you got a 30% bump. In some cases, the past 5 years, 100% bump. It's super easy, didn't do anything else, right? Now you got to do production, you got to take more risk maybe. Not for everybody, right? Like the NFL, we have always obeyed extreme power laws. Now the power laws are even more extreme. So we're in a world where, you know, just a year and a half ago, we were talking about the NBA tripling the rights. Well, if the NBA only doubles the rights, I know that there's some journalist somewhere, not you, Nick, that's going to say that's failure, and which is ridiculous, but the expectations are being reined in, right? The college football playoff, that process has not gone how it was supposed to go. They're still going to get their money, but the sorting out of how this property is the most valuable to whom, who can treat it as core and monetize it in the contents of, as you talked before, these networks are very different. They're different, diverse portfolios, means that there may only be one that can really do that. There's no auction here. Meet the price, right? But no one's rolling in to outbid it. That, I think, is already happening within the system. The potential of the alliance, I guess we can call it, to impact those rights, I think in the short or even medium run, you know, the system's going to continue to do that. Folks are just being choosier about what they're doing and how. The entities are clearly going to operate separately on their rights bids. Is there a potential in the future for them to come together and find a way to make joint bids and eliminate competition in the marketplace even further? Sure, but if you asked me right now, given we haven't seen any real auctions, you referenced Amazon, you know, being tepid. I think outside of Thursday Night Football, both Amazon and Apple, who are very different companies, but very different strategic media objectives in this experiment, because it really still is an experiment for both of them, in my opinion, because they do things like this all the time, right? They spend multiple billion dollars and leave a business. Just ask Bill Gates and health insurance. With Amazon, right? Or primary ticketing with Amazon, right? They've learned really fast that the established system is giving up enough stuff, that they're incremental to it, and they don't need to do anything. You know, Apple and Amazon are not required to bail out the media business. They've learned that these properties are available. They can bid fairly for things, and they don't have to go bananas because nobody's fighting them for the things that they're letting go. So I just think that there's a natural tapering happening because of the media distribution evolution, with the revenues going away and the content costs needing to adjust in kind of a natural progressive way. The coming together of the rebundling is part of figuring out the distribution and stabilizing the revenue side. Obviously, costs are a part of that, but I think the system is handling the costs in aggregate already. So future speculation about these three companies coming together to kind of eliminate bidders in the marketplace, I feel, if anything, that's a long-term trend. And then we're going to start talking about what, you know, like the Federal Trade Commission thinks about stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the flags that have been raised about what this looks like in the future, depending on, and ultimately it comes down for me, is how important this platform, which has yet to be named, how important it actually is in the mix, right? If you now look at what they've all done, they've gone from, almost all of them have gone from, if we build it, they will come mentality, building, we're going to build our own platform, everyone's going to come because we're so great, too, right? we need to bundle up, otherwise we've got no chance, and be in as many places and available as in many places as possible to make sure we can get the flywheel of revenue out of advertising subscriptions and different audience groups. So that's all that game's basically flipped 180, because like you were saying before about the Netflix effect of everyone thinking that was the playbook, and in fact if they ignored Netflix, they would have been in a much better place. So looking at what's happened now, part of a couple of other small features of this deal I think worth talking about are the fact that this is, you know, effectively a bundle of sports rights. They'll also be able to bundle this product alongside Disney Plus and Hulu and Max. So all of the requisite stakeholders have an opportunity to bundle with their existing services, which is, I think, an important but not a huge thing, but you would expect it to be the case. And the other bit really for me that's interesting, although not that surprising, is that Bob Iger said amongst their litany of announcements this week, including their $1.5 billion investment into Epic Games, they've confirmed that ESPN will still go D2C in August 2025, which is an interesting timing for that, because that still gives them plenty of runway for this platform to go live before they launch their own direct-to-consumer proposition, which will include all the linear ad channels again, ESPN Plus, ESPN Bet somehow, and probably a few things extra. So when I look at it and reflect on that, particularly from ESPN's lens, I feel like you start piecing all those things with what they do with ABC and their rights they have there as well. They're going to have stakes in the ground everywhere to serve different audience groups versus the Netflix, or the what was the Netflix model of just build our own platform and that'll do the job. What's your take on particularly the fact that ESPN is going to have a direct-to-consumer product, which is almost the same in terms of at least the deliverables within that mix? Does it make a lot of sense still to have your own direct-to-consumer product, given it's so similar to what you're going to have in another place as well? I guess economics obviously play a role there, right?
I think it does right now. So one, you know, the pay TV bundle, the old pay TV bundle, was take it or leave it. We had some tiers, right? But it was like everybody was incentivized to be on that basic plus tier, which scaled the most and had a higher price than just the basic tier. So as we move out and we look at the rebundling, referring again to the article I wrote a couple of years ago for you guys, elements of consumer choice are one of the things that the internet enables. And that's one of the reasons why you have pressures on revenue. But how do you stabilize the revenues is by trying to make it as reasonably possible without giving them complete control of the consumer, more options. So I'll be really honest, right? I just think if you're a sports fan, you love ESPN, you know, you need ESPN enough, you need other stuff too. But, you know, it's logical that there may be someone who's super just happy with ESPN and something else and they're done. And for those consumers, it's worth trying to figure out what the addressable market is, because so far the addressable markets have just been completely wrong. Like you said, I mean, one of the problems with the folks who have left the pay TV bundle, one of the challenges for all of the sports businesses, Disney, Fox, all of them, is it seems like those folks who have left were probably light sports viewers. Matter of fact, most of the big media companies' sports viewers are still in the bundle. And there, you see that in, you know, obviously out of home measurement in the United States is increased viewing, but you're just seeing a smaller universe of people utilizing the sports channels more, and you're starting to see that drive the ratings as well. Right. So they're still there, right? The super sports fan being uncaptured somehow already through either an vMVPD, which is just a pay, you know, folks think they cut the cord when they went to Hulu Live. They just moved the cord. It's actually the economic, you get paid more if you're a channel owner inside of vMVPD than you do in a regular one. So, outside of that, you know, how many people are you going to track today? I think not as many as some people in the press think, right? But in the future, we're setting the stage for more attractiveness in bundling by giving the consumer some control over what they bundle. The problem is that it is going to cut into economics, because the great thing was like take it or leave it. And now we can figure out how to price everything in aggregate, and ESPN can take up a lot of the pricing and something else doesn't. But because we all own a bunch of stuff within it, it works. So that's going to put pressure on revenues, right? But it can stabilize them. And if you start to begin to get sophisticated and toss in services, the easy one's broadband, but you start getting to some of the technological innovations that we're talking about that are going to be driven by telecommunication distributors and companies, those are high margin businesses where video is not, and video can become marketing for those high margin services. And we begin to create a new model, right? And those services are everything from gaming to voice assistance in the house, to sending your driverless car to pick up your teenage daughter who won't get her driver's license. Some people have that problem, Nick, that needs a solution desperately. And so I think it makes sense. You're right, though. It seems a little like, wow, why do you need all of this? Well, you need all of it because I think we're in a phase now where we got to try a bunch of stuff. That's part of this process. That's why it's not a fixer. Some people have been calling this the winner's bundle. I think it's the staying alive bundle.
I like that. I'm a big fan of the song Staying Alive as well. It plays in our car every now and again. Kids love that song. Go on the Bee Gees.
Marketing writes itself, right? It's the get John Travolta. We could, it's almost like I worked in this business.
Yeah, look, it is interesting what the outcome of that is, and what this product will be. You know, there's speculation around what price point it will be, and I don't think any of that's really clear. Everyone's looking at some of the revenues that are created through cable currently to try and come up with a number around the $40 mark. And there's some people that being saying it's plus or minus $40 a month is what they're expecting the pricing to be. But I don't know if you have a thought on what level.
Yeah. So look, you know, you've heard me talk about this. You know, there's a big misunderstanding about the difference between a bundled price and an unbundled price. And what the public sees a lot are bundled prices for channels. They hear their RSN $6 and they say, well, I'd pay $6. And then, you know, Nessun 360 or Nessun Plus or whatever they're calling it comes out and it's $29.99 a month. And everybody goes, what is going on here? It's $7 here in Boston inside, you know, my pay TV distributor. And that's because you're seeing the bundled price inside pay TV, which enables scale, right? The channel can be offered to the consumer because there's so much other charges inside it that the true cost of the channel is buried. It's a wholesale price. When you bust it out by itself, the real true price of the channel is much higher, much higher. If you just do so people are coming to this $30, $40 number by just adding up the bundled prices. And I'm not sure that all of them are adding up the bundled prices to include the retransmission fees for the Fox and ABC broadcast affiliates. So, you know, when you start looking at that unbundled, the number gets a lot higher. I mean, a lot higher. I did an analysis, a really informed one, about 18 months ago on ESPN, and I came to $60 unbundled, right? So this thing's got to be more than that unbundled. So the key is back to the distributors. What are they going to do? Because the distributor, if you take a look at the Disney Charter deal, basically Charter said, look, we'll give you all the raises you want on the sports stuff. They took ESPN from like 9.50 to 11. But you got to stop making us pay for this entertainment content you put inside Disney Plus. And even more, we want to offer the ad-supported version inside to our broadband customers and to our pay TV customers as well for free. And that was an example of how ESPN secured their pricing increases. Charter got back the entertainment content for a lot less. Disney's gaining viewership and promotion to it, right? So when we talk about pricing, the distributors are going to be crucial. And the Disney Charter deal is instructive about how you work this up. If you want this thing to be $40 a month, the distributors have to be competitive with, have to be comfortable with that price being competitive with their pay TV bundles. So what are they getting? Do they get to offer this right now out of the box? The Alliance is saying no. But having been more than a casual observer of these things, I feel like that's the opening of a negotiation. So I feel Disney Charter deal is very instructive, but pricing is key. If this thing comes out and it's $80 a month, that's fine. But don't expect it to be gangbusters, because at $80 a month, right? Everybody keeps talking about YouTube TV as being some kind of benchmark. Look, if this thing's $30 a month while Nessun 360 is $29.99 a month without distributor, you know, the distributors, most people need to understand distributors, if they feel you're competing with them in market on price, they have the unilateral right to cut off the economics immediately. If the economics are cut off from pay TV immediately, no one can pay their bills. It's just not going to happen that way. So that's my little soliloquy on pricing.
So let's talk a little bit more then about the economics at play here. So pricing and selling access to this platform will obviously be a pretty keen important one. Like we said at the start of this, the joint venture is that the three parties will have equal share. Like I said also at the start, I can't imagine, my speculation, and I want to get your take here, Pat, but my speculation would be that there'll be some sort of framing of whatever everyone's bringing to the table will be adjusted accordingly. So the revenues brought in through the platform will be distributed proportionately to what's been brought to the table. There's some flags that come up in that sort of model, and on like how that might be something you can agree now, but how do you keep agreeing in the future, which leads to, you know, inevitably challenging conversations to happen at the top level in the future, but that is a future us problem. I'm also expecting the advertising revenues that are created to sit as sit within their own prerequisite network revenue streams. That won't filter into this. That'll just be another distribution channel for them. Is there anything that else you think could be part of this where they can generate a significant amount of revenue to make this more valuable? Or is it, again, just basically another platform, another way of generating income for those collective rights?
Well, if you look at the way it's structured, right, it's structured a lot like a Hulu deal was, right, from what I've seen, okay? So you're going to have the ability to put content costs over to this new co, while, you know, it's going to help you with your content costs, but the revenue all flows back to the owners. So this is going to help them with their content costs. And so in some ways right now, you have to look at the accounting and how they're going to get this done. This is going to help them offload content costs, while at the same time help the revenue. Like you said, the increased reach from TV advertising, because Nielsen measures this, all of this now. By the way, Nielsen Media Research, the official measurement service of all streaming, which was not in anybody's bingo card 2 years ago.
I know.
They're like poster child, and there's a big picture of Nielsen up at Netflix now. The truth of the matter is that that's going to flow down into advertising revenue at each one of these individual companies. The key will be how they allocate the content costs inside of that, right? And how they the pay TV economics, right? Which my understanding is, well, you know, if you're ESPN and you've got $20 worth of sub fees, or making this up, very directional, you're getting, you know, 2/3 of the economics, right? If that's 2/3 of the total fees, right, coming through it. So that's one of the details that this joint venture has to work out. And I think it's one of the reasons why they're copying the Hulu model for all practical purposes. They really are. My friend Mike Lang and Jason Kilar built that business. You know, it's a very effective one when you're pioneering a bit here, which is what they're doing. The key will be, you know, who they pick as the CEO. It's going to have its own organization, right? So how do some of these negotiations work? And what is the role of the JV's leadership in, for example, a pay TV conversation with ESPN? There will be no situation, I believe, where that will leave the control of these individual companies. But that doesn't mean that the CEO probably is going to have a lot of power too. So it's going to be very interesting. One of the reasons why we haven't seen any details on that, Nick, is I'm pretty sure it was hard enough just to get them all to agree to do this. I can't wait until they start trying to paper this thing. It's going to be fascinating. But they'll get it done. They will get it done, because I think they all recognize that this is, you know, it's not going to make anything better immediately, but it's clearly progress, and we'll build it. And we'll go from there. And I do like the way they're structuring, because, again, they're going to spread content costs out, but they're going to keep their revenues intact and own them. And that's super important.
Just quickly on looking at the competitor side here, obviously there's Amazon, there's CBS and NBC Universal that are not part of this. Now, one of the interesting stories that comes up, which I don't know if we'll have time to dig into too much today, but is the Amazon's investment into Diamond Sports Group, or investment, I don't know if that's quite the right word, helping them get out of bankruptcy, or Chapter 11, I think is what they achieved. And with that, at a pretty nominal cost, got access to an incredible amount of in-market games and sports across the US. Do you think any of this is a reaction to perhaps that sort of move by Amazon, or even Netflix now coming to the table? Or do you think this was just something that was in the works already because they needed to find a new opportunity to help on the economic side?
I think it's all part of the process. Clearly, this had to be in place before any of those announcements. Mm. Though I'm not surprised by Netflix's investment in the WWE. By the way, that's another symbol. But another example of how the marketplace, you know, they basically got a flat deal. It's a good deal, Ari's offloaded his risk and he's put it on a platform that he believes is going to survive all this, which it pretty much is, right? That's another sign. But I do think it's all wrapped up into that, right? When you talk about the Amazon investment, people keep talking about Amazon bailing out Diamond. They're not. Diamond's going to get $1 billion between what Sinclair now is agreed to give them and the recapitalization of the unsecured debt holders who will own the company, which is unusual because usually the unsecured debt guys want to go back to doing debt. They don't want to own equity. So clearly they like the plan emerging from bankruptcy, contrary to maybe what the league partners are saying, or at least one league partner, who, by the way, I don't blame them for doing that, right? Because they're negotiating. You know, it's a negotiation. No, you know, everybody's negotiating. You can negotiate and you're not lying. It's just the truth, Nick. That is the truth.
It's a fine line, but yeah.
Well, present your position aggressively. The facts must be interpreted, right? And you're doing that. So, Amazon's investment is I think a cheap way for them to get an opportunity to try to add an experiment with their advertising business at a local level. These RSNs, these teams, one of the paradoxes is the St. Louis Cardinals, when they are on Bally Sports Midwest on a Tuesday night, will typically, in primetime, will typically beat the combined broadcast cume average of the broadcast television networks in the marketplace. That's adding up the ratings of Fox, ABC. That's been going on for 20 years. It hasn't changed, right? So if you're Amazon, you look at that and you say, well, there might be value there, right? So, but we need to figure that out. So this is a cheap way for them to get involved. They have some call options. They have a way to consolidate with yes in it. If you look at, so there's some interesting things there for them, but it's a super cheap number. The thing that for me, a lot of people are not misunderstanding about that, Nick, quickly, is that those games won't be on Prime Video. Those games will be, the Bally Sports Plus app will be offered inside channels for probably more than $19.99, which, by the way, people don't pay attention to Amazon's channels business, but I actually think that's what the real objective is. Prime Video is super expensive. Channels, being a modern distributor, is a good business. And so that they're going to be dealing with that and doing that. And the $100 million for all the digital rights fees for all the teams that Bally's currently have, if you think about it, what does that say about the value of the digital rights? Which goes back to my point, right? It's hard to make money. Everybody thinks there's all this money in digital. It's much more complicated than that. It is for some of these local teams, I'll be honest, I think some of the digital rights are near zero. When you take the opportunity cost of losing the pay TV money into consideration, which for the RSNs is more extreme than it is for ESPN. Mm.
You make a great point about the Amazon business. We have talked about a few times on this pod about the channels business and their desire to be the ultimate aggregator is a huge part of their focus. And we actually had Alex Green, who's was Marie Donoghue's equivalent in Europe, talk at our recent event in Madrid about that. And Marie talked at our event last year in New York about that similarly. But it seems to be doubling down on that. And now this, from a sports perspective, is such a huge shift. And then you see what YouTube's doing. They're offering their own version of subscription, not just YouTube TV, but they're offering subscriptions available through their own requisite channels in the US, Germany, and UK. Again, they're all now fighting for this aggregation play, which is going to be super interesting to see. The thing I took out of the deal with Amazon was quite surprising to me. I was just curious to get your take on this, was the Bally Sports deal, the naming rights deal for the RSNs, because obviously they used to be owned by Fox Sports and were sold on, was $85 million a sponsorship deal for 10 years. That feels like an absolute bargain. Yeah. An absolute bargain for everyone. Maybe the Bally Sports were always talked about the most positive light because of what was covered in the media. But they had such prominence through and reach through that deal that I thought $85 million was an absolute steal for Bally Sports to get those rights. No idea if it paid off for them, but I was just really surprised at how relatively small that number is in comparison to the scale of that business or that those sets of businesses.
Yeah, that's come up before in some of my work. And the truth of the matter is that it didn't meet the expectations, right? One of the complicated, and this is a totally different pod, one of the complicated things about the growth of sports gaming since the Supreme Court decision that legalized the United States is that its blessings have not quite met the expectations. Certainly public equity values have, okay? But the truth is the revenues are more complicated than that. And when it came down to, you know, what people were really going to put down in money and an investment in the Bally Sports distribution system for a gaming sponsorship, the numbers came up. People were cautious. So yeah, you're right. The fact that that number didn't meet expectations is actually an important factor, right? Because it was supposed to. It's you know, with gaming, like, how do you say it's additive, but it's more complicated, and we're not. That's also part of this. A lot of people expecting that to fix problems. In particular, if you're expecting gaming to fix the media growth program, you know, if I'm right, zero media growth, right, in aggregate. If you're expecting that to be fixed by gaming revenue somehow, anywhere, place, all over the place, aggregate system, you know, I'd be careful with that. That doesn't mean people can't make a lot of money in gaming, Nick. I mean, but it just means that, like, it's not going to replace those media revenues. I mean, I think baseball makes $12.5 billion. $5.5 million of that is media. $2.5 million of that is local. My guess is 50% of that is threatened. You're not going to, you know, baseball may make $1.5-2 billion in gaming to offset that. I don't know. The real answer is I don't know. Now, I'm bullish on it, right? But I'm like, it's not the cure-all for everything. It doesn't fix the problem. The problem's more complicated than that. So it's part of the solution. But right now, and it's still in its early phases, its delivery is uneven. And the Bally Sports sponsorship number for gaming is instructive.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one of the things we skirted around the edge of this with regards to what are some of the problems and risks with this deal. You've mentioned a couple already, Pat. Could you just sort of run through a couple of those that you foresee, that whether it's in the boardroom, whether it's the deal construction that they're working through now, that might cause this type of deal, this type of relationship, perhaps with some of the biggest media businesses in the world, and definitely in the US. What are some of the risks that you foresee could be a play?
Well, so let's say that this doesn't do anything, right? And, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, I learned as a young officer, right? Not as I'm listening, is like, how do you get the hell out of here? Right? It's like, you know, what's your exit plan, right? There's two things, right, that I learned in the military that applies for. What does success look like? And how do we get out of this? I can't tell you how many times neither one of those questions were answered in projects I was in. Okay. So number one, defining success. And what happens if we're successful? Do we start fighting over the money? Does somebody try to buy it? You know, what is all that? Which, by the way, makes the deal longer, but it's probably necessary to do. And then also, how do we get out? Right. One of the reasons why the Hulu deal is so complicated is the getting out part is complicated. And I think they'll work hard to try to get through that. So I think you're talking when complexity builds value and is sophisticated, right? And can be elegant. At the same time, it increases risk. Not to use another military analogy, but the best plan is the simple plan. But you don't always get the option to have the best simple plan. So this is a good plan, I think. I think this is a necessary step. I salute everyone. But I think the biggest thing is, like, what happens if we're successful, or what happens if it's really doesn't work? I think the middle and chugging along, everyone's feeling pressure. Well, then we're all united by the need to work together, right? The external enemy thing. But if we get really successful, or it really, you know, just blows out, how's that all going to work? To me, that's the hardest part of finishing this deal.
So well, do you see now that this deal has happened, and there's been a number of other types of aggregation, JV deals happening, distribution deals happening across the industry, which you could rattle through, even the RSN arrangement between MSG and Yes to Create Game is a great example that makes a lot of sense in a lot of instances, but there's never an easy deal to sort of agree on. Do you think we're going to see any more of these types of situations pop up in the near future? Or do you think this kind of now crafts out another dynamic, and now you're going to see almost like further movement away from each other, where NBC is going to continue to do its thing. Amazon's trying to take over this aggregation approach, and YouTube's going to keep doing its thing and keep testing the waters with the different approaches it's making through not only the NFL but other moves they're making for their vMVPD product. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that you're going to see more of this, but you're also going to see people trying to keep their options open. That's why the ESPN DTC product's there. So I think you're going to get to see, you know, look, NBC has got it. You know, NBC is owned by a pay TV distributor. They're kind of that. They're their own. They're going to do their own thing for a while, right? But in the end, you know, I point back to that article I wrote 3 years ago. I talked about, you know, in the end, having the flexibility to cobble things together within reason, so the consumer had, you know, some choice, but not control, right? Because that you can't price it. You that's the problem. That's a problem with everything in a business. You have to have control of the product you offer. You're going to see people continue to keep their options open. So in the short run, you're going to need to do a lot of things, right? Which is why this is just a kind of the end of the beginning as we try to sort this out. I firmly believe in the end that you're going to see it probably come together. But who survives all of this? We haven't seen any real consolidation yet, right? We're going to have a presidential election here in the United States. And if we have a different regime, regulatory, we have a different philosophy. I'm not saying which one's right and which one's wrong. You know, it may be possible for an Amazon to buy Fox. Made that up. Okay. I made that up. Maybe Fox buy Amazon, you know. No, you don't buy me. I buy you. All right, yeah, the Godfather, I buy you out, right? Yeah, maybe that, who knows, okay? But I think you're going to see a lot of complexity. At the same time, you're going to see cooperation to try to figure out. By the way, when we talk about what can go wrong with deals and media complexity, some of the people in that MSGN, you know, the tie-up of the RSNs, that's some fun personalities, and that should be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I have. I'm not that close to it as you are, but I have heard similar, actually, from that world. So one thing, obviously, that is a big risk in this is, you know, we've talked about. I mean, people that you can mention by surnames in an industry normally says a lot, right? But Zaslav, Iger, and Murdoch, you know, the three names on the press release and three of the most recognizable names in sports media. Them themselves will have challenges in continuing to agree on the direction forward. Then what I think is also interesting here is even to get the platform up and running, you're going to have a marketing and branding and positioning, a pricing, and then the technology and what they're actually going to offer, and then what resources they're going to put into that. Because obviously ESPN and Disney have got a very robust legacy or history in live streaming through acquiring MLB Advanced Media and then creating BAM Tech and being pretty proud of what they've done with their streaming products. And Warner Brothers Discovery, you know, aren't slouches either. So they'll all want to be putting their own two cents into there. So I don't know. I just feel there could be a lot of moments where there's going to be not only the CEO and the leadership of this new organization, but even how many new people they're going to bring into this central company or this JV, and how many they're going to pull in from all the different businesses because they have so much expertise already in there. I think that's probably the biggest thing for me that will be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, you're right. There's going to need to be – so some of these people have to be walled off from it because it's supposed to be, you know, a company that's got some distance between everyone. At the same time, you have to lever the assets you have. So I would imagine that there will be, you know, some headcount increases here, right? But they're going to work hard to keep that under control. The last thing they need is a high-cost business that – this business is going to lose money for a while, not just on an accounting base. I mean, it's going to lose money. You really have to control that the best as possible. So I would look for a lean structure. It'll be interesting to see the type of CEO they pick, right? You know, there's multiple different ways you can go about thinking about that, right? There are assets they can lever. You know, the biggest problem with digital is the technology costs. I mean, you just can't miss a CapEx a cycle. In the old broadcast pay TV era, we could miss CapEx cycles for a couple of years, get away with it. Can't do it today. Can't do it at all. Your stuff has to look as good as your competitors every moment. So So they do have a lot of expertise, you're right, but how they lever them and what needs to be up there legally as a wall and what is a practically a wall and what the philosophy is on the cooperation will be very interesting to watch, Nick. It will be.
Yeah, I think the legal side's going to be legal part's going to be a huge thing to follow and how they get that dynamic right. I can imagine their competitors are going to be saying, "Hey, there's got to be some colluding going on here when there's future rights deals to happen." And on the technology front, I think it always surprises people when I talk to people in this space about, even if you've got this runway, this experience, and the capabilities internally, if you're creating a new product, a new proposition, it's still really, really expensive to go live and to launch something from scratch if it's not part of the existing ecosystem. So, I think that's going to be interesting to see how much they do really invest in that and whether it's a channel, another distribution mechanism for them, or they are really going all in and making this the premier sports destination for sports fans. So anyway, Pat, I'm conscious of time. It's been great to talk to you about this. I'm very interested to see where it goes, and no doubt lots more exciting announcements coming in the next few months and years as we continue to see the industry making up for some of the errors perhaps it's made along the way or assumptions it's made in what is a successful and viable approach in this space. But we're only about a month away actually from our New York event. Hopefully I'll get to see you in the flesh there, and there'll be lots of interesting people who will definitely be now hit up quite heavily to talk about this particular subject matter, like your John Laskers of ESPN Plus and a couple of C-levels from Warner Brothers Discovery and Fox who are on stage as well. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they've got to say as well.
Okay, yeah, that's great. I mean, you've got a good lineup there. So hopefully I will be able to make it. But regardless, right, thanks for having me, Nick. And my maxim for us going forward in the media business is really simple. Remember, no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. Get ready to pivot.
I love that. Every time I hear the word pivot, I think of Friends, actually. There's a scene with Ross and the stairs. And I can never get it out of my head about this, despite how much I try. But I think that's a great spot to wrap up. Thanks so much, Pat, for your time as always. And look forward to chatting again with you soon.
Okay, take care.